The next topic, poetic diction. What is poetic diction? English neoclassical poets, like their French contemporaries, were very particular about the division of poetry into various kinds of genre, such as the elegy, the heroic poem, the satire, the epic, and so on. They upheld the principle of decorum, which demands that for every kind a particular style is needed and that there should not be any confusion of styles. Further, they draw a wedge between the language of prose and language of serious poetry. For lower genre, like satire, they did not mind using the language and the idiom of prose, but for the elegy, the heroic poem, the epic, and such like genre, what they aimed at employing as a language as far removed for the lowly prose as possible. Obviously, is an epic, such words as pot, broom, or even door could not be used, as their presence would create a bathetic effect. Consequently, a special language of poetry was devised and later traditionalized. By the practice of the poet after poet. This special language somewhat settled and artificially ruled the roost for decades and was challenged only by Wordsworth at the end of 18th century. In the preface of the second edition of Lyrical Ballads, 1800, Wordsworth vehemently protested against what he called the guidance in Nautilus, the guidance and the aim phraseology of many modern writers. He further protested in inverted comma, there will also be found in these volumes little of what is usually called poetic diction, as much pain has been taken to avoid it as is ordinarily taken to produce it. Wordsworth was against the very principle of division of language into a language of prose and language of poetry. He went so far as to assert that, in inverted comma, there neither is nor can be any essential difference between the language of prose and metrical composition. Poetry sheds no tear such as angels weep, but natural and human tear. She can boast of no celestial ichor that distinguishes her vital juices. For those of prose, the same human blood circulated through the vein of both. Coleridge, in Biographia Literaria, converted Wordsworth's point of view. He maintained that there ought to be some difference between the language of poetry and that of prose, as there should be some difference between the language of prose and that the actual conversation. "I write," said Coleridge, "and meter because I am about to use language different from that of prose." It may be pointed out here that Wordsworth did not notably criticize the language diction used by many of his preceders, but also their frequent indulgence in archaism, both of grammar and vocabulary, then various other poetic lessons thrust into service for poetizing their language and consequently removing it as far from the language of prose as possible. Robert Bridges, in his essay Poetic Diction in English in Collected Essays 1910, observed in inverted comma, "The revolt against the old diction is a reaction which in its general attitude is rational, and it is line with the reaction of the lack of a school of poetry familiar to all students in Wordsworth's statement and Coleridge's criticism and correction of the statement in a Biographia Literaria. Both movements alike protest against all archaisms of vocabulary and grammar and where what are called literary form and plead for the simple term and direct form of common speech." Its history and examples. It is usual to blame Dryden and Poe, the protagonist of the neoclassical school of poetry, as the poets who established the so-called poetic diction in England. However, it is not Dryden and Poe, but their imitator, who ought to be blamed for it was they who thought the poetic diction could be a substitute for poetic inspiration. But poetry is not diction alone, it is so many things beside. In all field of arts, observed Robert Bruce in the essay mentioned above, the imitators are far from more numerous than the artists, and they will copy the external in poetry. The versification of diction, which in their hand become futile. 18th century poetic diction does not start with Pope. The vast fund of poetic diction could not be created overnight. It was rather the cumulative result of efforts of a large number of poets spread over many years. Nevertheless, broadly speaking, it is Joshua Sylvester who can be credited with the use of the first time of that peculiar phraseology which goes under the label of poetic diction. And his verse translation of the French poet Du Bartas's epic La Semaine, we come across numberless poetic ornaments, the extravagance which are rather unimaginatively flung here, there and everywhere. Both Du Bartas in his original French composition and Sylvester in his English translation employed a very large number of expressions derived from Latin instead of their native equivalents. Such expressions ultimately formed a fairly large proportion of poetic diction. The tendency of Du Bartas and Sylvester to use Latinism was chiefly didactic, dictated apart from the consideration of ornamental value by their search for completion. Verbs and participle adjective derived from Latin were evidently more concise than their composite equivalent in French and English. For illustration, see the following line by Sylvester. A noise thip that in a closet spies, a heap of gold that on the table lies. Play fearful, shivering twists or tries extend, and twice and thrice to rise this finger's end. The unpurged array to water would resolve, and water would be mountain top and wall. Another method of comparison employed by Sylvester and the later poets was the pictorial kind. For instance, for the lodestone, iron mistress for the sea, watery camp for the fish, scaly crew, and so on. A very common procedure was to frame a two-worded phrase with round as the second word and some epithet as the first. All this practice contributed toward the proliferation of 18th century poetic diction. Many poets of the 17th century accepted the lead of Sylvester. Among them may be mentioned Dryden, William Browne, Sandys, Venlos, Milton, Dryden, Sandys, and translator of Ovid did the most before Dryden to popularize poetic diction through his own example. He had taken upon himself the task of translating Ovid into almost equal number of lines in English. Moreover, he was to employ pentameters, not the hexameter of the original. This put him to the necessity of compression, more particularly because Latin itself is a much more concise language than English. Naturally enough, Sandys has to have a recourse to the method of Sylvester and also to devise a number of formulas of his own. The result was that the language of metrical composition moved further and further from the language of prose or the language of actual conversation, which was to be advocated by Wordsworth for use in metrical composition. The translation of Lucan rendered by Thomas May 1626-27 and Raw 1718 so such indebtedness of Celeste Sylvester and Sandys, so do Milton's minor and some of his major poem and less does. For instance, Milton used various phrases which have the rings of poetic diction and many more which are used for their poetic beauty and even unnaturalness. Dr. Johnson expressed his keen dislike of Lycidas on the ground that much in it was unnatural or away from common experience. After Milton, it was Dryden, the founder of the neoclassical school of poetry, who really established poetic diction so firmly that it continued ringing uninterrupted for about 100 years to follow. Especially speaking, it was in his translation of Virgil that, to maintain the dignity of the original, he employed high-strung diction in his satire. However, his diction and idiom are nearer the language of prose. Satire, as we have already pointed out, was considered by the neoclassicists a low genre and as such was not deemed to require any special wrought diction and idiom. The role of Pope. In the respect Pope thought alike with Dryden in his satire, we have not much of so-called poetic diction. They are couched in a conversational language adorned with poetic gewgaws. Consider, for instance, the opening lines of his epistle to Arbuthnot. Shut the door, good John, fatigued, I said. Tie up the knocker, says I am sick, I am dead. Pope was very much particular about the demand of decorum or appropriateness of the style to the subject or the genre, as he says the essay on criticism. Expression is the dress of thought and still appear more decent as more suitable for different style with different subject sort, as several garbs with country, town and court. In practice, he was very particular even about the style of his letter. Spence report these words of Pope in inverted comma, it is ideal to say that letters should be written in easy familiar style that likes most other general rules will not hold. The style in letter, as in all other thing, should be adapted to the subject. It is in his translation of Homer that Pope makes the maximum use of poetic diction. Pope felt that the sublimity, the grandeur of the original were incapable of being conveyed in ordinary familiar English phrases. So he had to coin new one and had to draw numerous other form of procedures. As Homer has been almost universally and wholly held responsible for the creation of 18th century poetic diction. To quote some opinion, considered first Coleridge, who called it the main source of our pseudo-poetic diction. So they assert that it had done more than any or all other book toward the corruption of our poetry. Whatever be the other fault of Pope's Homer, it is evident that it was not the originator of poetic diction. Pope was merely following a tradition and the passing in it on to his successor. Geoffrey Tillotson observed in his connection, Pope's Homer is certainly the greatest work which used this diction, but Pope did not invent the diction. When he used it, he was drawing from the heading to a fund which had been growing for more than 100 years. A fund which has been argumented and improved by the progressive poet of the 17th century, that is, by those who stand in the direct line of the development. Pope used poetic diction in his Homer with a definitely utilitarian purpose in view. The compression, sublimity and archaic flavor of the original could be captured, he felt, only by the use of peculiar diction. He did not use it, as many of his successors did, for the purpose of ornament or for camel flagging in attractive trapping. The spell of poetic sterility he would, as he tells us. So, no mercy to an empty line. Pope is one of the most concise of English poets, though, to quote Tillotson again, he, in inverted comma, makes no fuss about his conciseness as Browning does. Note comma closed. The only senselessly prolix line in his poetry are those in which the parodies on senseless prolixity of others. This is how he satirized the impertinence of his rival in pastoral poetry. Of gentle Philips will I ever sing, with gentle Philip shall we valour ring, my number to for ever will I vary, with gentle Basildel and with gentle Kerr. Or if in ranging of the name and I jewel, with gentle Kerr, with gentle Basildel. Pope in fact condemns the needless unthinking use of poetic diction and peri, but thus he lesses the foolish poets who, as he puts it, instead of writing the plain shut the door, as he himself wrote in the first line of the epistle of Arbuthnot, quote above, write the wooden guardian of our privacy quick on its actual term. After Pope, poetic diction ruled supreme right till the end of the 18th century. The names of almost all the poets of the century are associated with its use. Dr. Johnson, Collins, Cowper all made use of it in the augmented and consolidated its fund. Wordsworth in the preface of the second edition is lyrical ballad, quotes verse from Dr. Johnson, Cowper and Gray and points out how their diction differ from the words used in speech and written prose. He calls them bad poetry for his region. Those who really did the most mischief were not these poets, however, but the numberless imitators of Pope who made the language of poetry altogether fantastic and altogether lifeless and conventional. Hence, Wordsworth went to the opposite extreme. In the keen desire for fresh air, a few windows are like to get broken. In condemning the poetic diction of the 18th century, Wordsworth went to the extent of condemning all the poetry which employed his diction. Hence, Tillotson complained in inverted comma, the poetic diction of good 18th century poetry has been much misunderstood, and denunciation of it has sometime been taken as the automatic denunciation of the poetry as a whole. Note comma closed. We must allow 18th century English poetry its due in spite of our disapproval of its poetic diction. The topic, poetic diction, over.